Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Before we get our show started today, here's a message from our sponsors. Hey, gang, if you can't get enough talk about liberty, then might I suggest you add the Jason Stapleton program to your weekly podcast lineup. It's hosted by my good buddy, Jason Stapleton, and 5 days a week, Jason covers the current political and economic news from a libertarian perspective. It's a must-listen show for anybody serious about liberty, so go right now and download his show on iTunes and visit jasonstapleton.com. That's J-A-S-O-N. Stapleton is S-T-A-P-L-E-T-O-N.com. And of course, a lot of people ask me, they're like, hey, Austin, you know, we love your show, but we want more liberty. What are some more podcasts? And Jason Stapleton does a fantastic show. So go to jasonstapleton.com and look him up on iTunes and download him today. All right, now back to the show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today is Thursday, October the 1st. It's the Halloween season. Yes, one of my favorite holidays. And I think actually, I read a study the other day that showed that more money is spent on Halloween than any other holiday. You would think that Christmas would be the big holiday, people buying gifts, but apparently people spend more on decorations, costumes, parties, and all sorts of things for Halloween. I mean, think about all the costs of the haunted houses. So it does sort of make sense if you think about it, and it's certainly one of my favorite holidays. I love the whole fall season. It's beautiful out. And now, of course, it's campaign season, so that's really scary. And what's scarier than Nazis, huh? Nobody wants to dress up as a Nazi because then you get in trouble. But talking about Nazis will get you in trouble, too. And that's why we're going to be talking today about Nazis and the road to serfdom, specifically, because it's in the news. Dr. Ben Carson, I'll call him the GOP front runner. I know Donald Trump is really pulling higher, but I've never really looked at Trump as a quote unquote serious candidate. And that's because he's not serious. He's not really proposing anything. And I think that he's more of a sort of a cotton candy candidacy. Can you say that three times? he's just more fluff. He's not really there to sort of inspire or educate. He's more of a sort of, to me, he's more like a wrecking ball, right? He's the Miley Cyrus of candidates. He's here, he's coming in like a wrecking ball to just take out the lower tier candidates of the race. And so far, he's been unable to take out his number one target, which is Senator Rand Paul. We saw a Reuters poll that came out, I believe just yesterday or 2 days ago, that showed Rand Paul in fifth place. So he's moved up from the bottom of the polls. And that probably has to do with the fact that we've lost candidates like Scott Walker who have dropped out. There's some rumors that Bobby Jindal might be next. Former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is gone as well. And we're all just sort of wondering who's going to be the next person that Trump is going to take out. And so far, he's been unable to take out his main target, Rand Paul. Rand's still in the race, and but right now Donald Trump's big competitor is in Benjamin Carson, and certainly the liberals would love to take out Ben Carson, which is why they're sort of zeroing in on some of his comments that he made about living in, if the United States could turn into he was questioning about whether or not he thought that the United States could turn into Nazi Germany. So I've actually downloaded Ben Carson's audio here, and let's listen to what he said to the reporters, and then we're going to read an article about it, and then we're going to talk about it, and I'm actually going to discuss with you today whether or not it's possible for the United States to follow the road to serfdom, and I'll actually read to you from the road to serfdom today, and we'll have a discussion about whether or not America can turn into a Nazi fascist state. So have a listen.
You said at the event that the PC police doesn't say that you can, you know, draw these comparisons to Nazi Germany, and people have called you out on that a lot because you've done it a lot. Right. What exactly do you mean when you say that that can happen here? What's going on in the current environment that's like the
third I mean, if people don't speak up for what they believe, then other people will change things without them having a voice. That's what I mean.
What does that have to do with Nazi Germany?
Well, Hitler changed things there, and nobody protested. Nobody provided any opposition to him, and that's what facilitated his rise.
So who's like Hitler here?
I'm not going to go into that. I think the example is pretty clear.
Are you comparing Obama to Hitler?
No. I am saying that in a situation where people do not express themselves, bad things can happen. That's the main problem that I have with political correctness. It keeps people from expressing themselves. And it's the expression, the conversation, that leads to solutions. The keeping everybody silent while you change the fabric of the society is not what America was supposed to be about.
Very interesting words from Ben Carson. And he seems to be placing the issue of political correctness front and center and saying that the sort of the tamping down on free speech or the chilling effect that the political correct police have on free speech is what might lead to the rise of fascism here in the United States. And of course, if you remember, Dr. Ben Carson was famous for calling out President Obama to his face at a national prayer breakfast. This is really what rocketed him to national stardom, was that he said that the politically correct police are out in full force at all times. And keep in mind, this is a presidential front runner here who is talking like this. And honestly, it's very exciting to me because it does start up a dialogue about whether or not fascism can come to America. And I do agree with Dr. Ben Carson that fascism can come to America. And I think the problem, unfortunately, with Dr. Ben Carson is you know, he says that he's not willing to sort of point fingers at what might be leading to the rise of fascism. But for the most part, I'm going to guess, if I might speculate here, I'm going to speculate that Dr. Ben Carson is suggesting that the politically correct police from the left, liberalism, will lead to the rise of fascism, at least liberalism as we understand it in modern America, not true liberalism or classical liberalism, but the socialist left, the social democratic left, they will lead to the rise of fascism. And, you know, Dr. Ben Carson is no joke. He's not an idiot. He doesn't know everything. He is a brain surgeon, and he's raised $20 million. I mean, he's a juggernaut right now, and you're not going to get in his way unless you really want to pick a fight with the wrong guy. Frankly, I would rather pick a fight with Donald Trump because he's an idiot. Ben Carson is not an idiot. He's not a fool. He said some dumb stuff. He said some things that I definitely, as a libertarian, disagree with, but overall, he's a very learned man. Now, I don't know Ben Carson's heart, but if I were to guess, I might speculate, and I could be wrong, that Dr. Ben Carson probably thinks that Donald Trump himself might be leading to the rise of fascism. I'm not sure what he's said, because he's been pretty tight-lipped about his number one opponent, Donald Trump, and he's been more than content to allow Trump to sort of wear himself out. Carson seems to be playing the rope-a-dope strategy fairly well, whereas Rand Paul has taken a more aggressive, full frontal attack approach with Trump, which I can't say it's necessarily been successful, but the approach that Benjamin Carson has taken has been to avoid direct entanglements with Trump. But I wonder if Carson thinks that Trump might actually be the one who's leading to the rise of fascism here in the United States. And so, you know, I'm reading this from the Times of Israel. Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson said a Nazi Germany-like regime is not impossible in the United States if people are prevented from being allowed to express their opinions. Speaking at a New Hampshire campaign event, Carson disputed the belief that, quote, a situation like what took place in Germany in the 30s and 40s could never happen in America. If you go back and look at the history of the world, tyranny and despotism and how it starts, it has a lot to do with control of thought and control of speech, Carson told the crowd. He said if people don't speak up for what they believe, then other people will change things without them having a voice. Hitler changed things there and nobody protested. Nobody provided any opposition to him, according to CNN. Following the speech, Carson was asked by reporters if his comments were directed at President Obama. He said, "No, I'm saying in a situation where people do not express themselves, bad things can happen. I think that example is pretty clear," he responded. This is not the first time Carson has compared the U.S. to Nazi Germany. In a 2014 interview with Breitbart News, he said the government and its institutions are very much like Nazi Germany. He says, "There you had the government using its tools to intimidate the population. We now live in a society where people are afraid to say what they actually believed," he explained. In August, Carson accused Obama of using coded anti-Semitic themes in his attempt to convince Congress to back the nuclear deal between Iran and world powers. Very interesting. And, you know, I would not be surprised whatsoever if in Ben Carson's heart of hearts, he wasn't pointing the blame, he wasn't pointing the finger of blame at Obama for this. I mean, he's certainly sort of pegged him in the past. And, you know, I agree the political correctness and the chilling effect that it has on free speech is a problem, and it could theoretically lead to the rise of fascism. But I'm more worried about what might come from the right. You see, it's the Nazis were white nationalists. This was a white supremacy movement. And it's going to be very hard to sort of galvanize the much more diverse liberal left around the identity politics that would lead to a national movement. Although they do sort of exist and function in such a way, the sort of natural insider-outsider effect that comes with different groups with different goals is probably more difficult to sort of rally that kind of charismatic leader around. Of course, that flies in the face of the logic of how Obama got elected. And I'm not saying it's not possible. But I do feel that it is much more, when we look at the right wing, they're less diverse. They're less diverse. And so when you think about like diversity and what it breeds, it does breed dissension amongst the different ranks, right? Which maybe that's a healthy thing. You know, they play a check and balance on one another. But when you look at the people who are overwhelmingly behind Donald Trump, for example, you have a much more unitary movement, a much more unified white identity politics sort of movement. And that has historically been what has led to actual fascism. Mussolini and Hitler, because there is a lack of diversity, and because there's a lack of internal opposition, everyone is unified. So I'm actually going to read to you today from The Road to Serfdom in Cartoons. And this is, actually, there's a funny story about this. When I was first starting out as a Libertarian Party activist, this was in 2008, I was working for the LNC, and I was charged with educating a group of young college students who were there in town for Obama's inauguration. And silly me, I thought that they came to the Libertarian Party to actually learn about libertarianism. And what I actually found out was that it was a trap. It was a trap. You know, Admiral Akbar, it's a trap. It's a trap. Their liberal college professor wanted to turn them away from libertarianism. So he brought them to the libertarian headquarters in order to sort of indoctrinate them further and to paint a straw man and to develop their minds and to harden their hearts against liberty. And how I know this is because when he came in, all of the college students were asking us questions, and they were loaded questions that were being handed to them by the professor, not like on a piece of paper or anything like that, but he was prodding them with and using leading language in order to get them to ask questions that would be like, you know, isn't prostitute the one of the questions I'll never forget that these poor brainwashed Obama 11 college kids was asked was this young lady asked was and this was at the Libertarian headquarters. She goes, isn't prostitution a form of slavery? And I was blindsided because I thought liberals were liberal, right? I thought liberal college students would be smart enough to think that, you know, you own your body, you should have the right to do with it as you please. But they saw prostitution as a patriarchal institution dedicated to enslaving women and using their bodies. I mean, this was Puritans. I mean, these aren't liberals. These are conservatives. They're arguing the conservative argument. And so they were all ratcheting, you know, coming down on me simply because I read to them from The Road to Serfdom. And it was funny because here's what happened. So I have The Road to Serfdom in Cartoons in front of me, and I'm going to read it to you today. We're going to talk about how the rise of fascism occurs. But the funny part of this story is that I'm sitting there reading to them from The Road to Serfdom, and I'm not paying attention to their responses. I'm just sort of like reading it. And then when I finish it, I look up. And I see that they're angry and they're looking at me with furious looks in their eyes. And I was sort of shocked by that because I didn't expect that response to The Road to Serfdom. But they were angry and they were looking at me, and one of the students looks at me and says, "So wait," and keep in mind, they're here for Obama's inauguration. they go, "So are you saying that you think Obama will become a dictator?" And I paused and I thought to myself, I go, oh my God, what am I going to answer to this? And I do what I always do. I told the truth. I look him right back in the eyes and I said, yes. I mean, they were just like, yeah. I mean, if they could have killed me, cut me down right there, then they would have done it, because they were so mad that I said that Obama would become a dictator. It's true. He did become a dictator, didn't he? And now I would love to see every college student from 2008 that was there in that room that was angry at me for saying Obama's a dictator. I'd love to see what they think of Obama now, their precious leader. But let's talk about now. I'm going to read the Road to Serfdom. Let's talk about the actual themes of what leads to the rise of fascism. We'll see if Ben Carson is right. The Road to Serfdom was originally published in Look magazine, and it was reproduced from a booklet that was published by General Motors in back in the day. But Friedrich Hayek wrote the original Road to Serfdom, which is sort of a dry book, a little bland, but I mean, fascinating to me. And if you don't want to read the whole book, you can get the Road to Serfdom in cartoons. It's actually a really great way to sort of explain to people how fascism and how democracy can lead to totalitarianism. And so number one, war forces national planning. To permit total mobilization of your country's economy, you gladly surrender many freedoms. You know that regimentation was forced by your country's enemies. Number two, many want planning, quote unquote, planning to stay. Arguments for a peace production board are heard before the war ends. Wartime planners who want to stay in power encourage the idea. And there's a gentleman sitting there and there's a radio saying, what's good in war is good in peace. Number three, the planners promise utopias. A rosy plan for farmers goes well in rural areas. A plan for industrial workers is popular in cities, and so on. Many new planners are elected to office. But they can't agree on one utopia. With peace, a new legislature meets, but when the war unity is gone, the planners nearly come to blows. Each has his own pet plan and won't budge. And citizens can't agree either. When the planners finally patch up a temporary plan months later, citizens in turn disagree. What the farmer likes, the factory worker doesn't like. Number six, planners hate to force agreement. Most national planners are well-meaning idealists, and they balk at any use of force. They hope for some miracle of public agreement as to their patchwork plan. Number seven, they try to sell the plan to all. In an unsuccessful effort to educate people to uniform views, planners establish a giant propaganda machine, which coming dictator will find handy. Number eight, the gullible do find agreement. Meanwhile, growing national confusion leads to protest meetings. The least educated, thrilled, and convinced by fiery oratory form a party. Number nine, confidence in planners fades. The more that planners improvise, the greater the disturbance to normal business. Everybody suffers. People now feel, rightly, that planners can't get things done. And there's a man in a crowd and he shouts, let's get a man who can make a plan work. Number 10, the strong man is given power. In desperation, planners authorize a new party leader to hammer out a plan and force its obedience. Later they dispense with him. They'll dispense with him. Or so they think. The party takes over the country. By now, confusion is so great that obedience to the new leader must be obtained at all costs. Maybe you join the party yourself to aid national unity. A negative aim welds party unity. Early steps of all dictators is to inflame the majority in common cause against some scapegoat minority. In Germany, the negative aim was anti-Semitism. And what do we have today? Anti-immigration. Anti-Mexicanism. No one opposes the leader's plan. It would be suicide. New secret police are ruthless. Ability to force obedience always becomes the number one virtue in the planned state. Now all freedom is gone. Your profession is planned. The wider job choice promised by now defunct planners turns out to be a tragic farce. Planners never have delivered, never will be able to. And there's a gentleman, so he's in the picture saying, but I'm not a carpenter, I'm a plumber. He's being forced to be a carpenter. Number 15, your wages are planned. Divisions of the wage scale must be arbitrary and rigid. Running a planned state from central headquarters is clumsy, unfair, and inefficient. And think about the minimum wage. Your thinking is planned. In the dictatorship, unintentionally created by the planners, there is no room for difference of opinion. Posters, radio, press, all tell you the same lies. Your recreation is planned. It is no coincidence that sports and amusements have been carefully planned in all regimented nations. Once started, planners can't stop. Your disciplining is planned. If you're fired from your job, it's apt to be by a firing squad. What used to be an error has now become a crime against the state. Thus ends the road to serfdom. And that is a very dramatic, I mean, imagine now you pick your head up and you look at the college students and they're all horrified because there's a man at a, who's been shot, you know, attached to a pole and he's been shot bent over. So was Ben Carson right? Well, he does have a point here. Of course, in number 16 in The Road to Serfdom, your thinking is planned. In the dictatorship, unintentionally created by the planners, there is no room for difference of opinions. Posters, radio, press, all tell you the same lies. Now, today in our American Republic, we do have a broad variety of opinions, and we do have new media, and the government does not totally control all of our avenues of thought and thinking. So if you want to look at the sort of political correct police, that I think that is a push towards a unitary way of thinking, and then it is a push towards a road to serfdom. I don't know that it's ultimately going to be successful unless there were some already national push for a central plan, which of course we do have lots of people pushing for central planning here in the United States. Socialism is central planning by definition. That's why almost all of the world's dictators, the most murderous dictators, have been socialists or called themselves socialists because it requires central planning. Socialism, technically defined, is central planning and it's central control over the means of production. And so when we have these interests in the United States that are competing with one another, like the agrarian interests versus the industrial interests, you know, people think that a central plan could make everyone happy, but it's just not the case. You know, that's why we have decentralization here in the United States. That's why we have the idea of federalism, and that's why the Constitution allows for the states to have rights to make decisions for themselves, because the interests of the agrarian far south is not going to be the same as the industrial north. And the American Southwest and the American Northwest certainly have their ways of doing things. I mean, the American Northwest, the Washington, Oregon, and many places in that region are heavily inundated by socialists. And so they would want something different than perhaps Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Louisiana, Kentucky, all of those states are going to want. And so here in the United States, it will be difficult for central planners to force agreement. You know, I mean, most national planners are these well-meaning idealists. And that's what you see with Bernie Sanders, for example. He's a well-meaning idealist who thinks that he needs to hammer out a national plan for all people in the United States. And that is literally the road to serfdom. And we don't really have a lot of candidates in the presidential race who I think are talking about these problems. I'm actually glad that Ben Carson brought it up. And people say, oh, it can't happen here. That's ridiculous. Democracy can always lead to the road to serfdom if we do not learn the lessons of the past. And I think Ben Carson, he's going to get in trouble for it, because you just can't bring up Nazi Germany without getting trouble. Of course, if Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders people compared Donald Trump to Nazis, then of course, oh yes, the liberal media would all be like trumpeting it. Yes, of course Trump would lead to the rise of fascism and Nazism and whatever, what have you. And while I might agree that the white identity politics and the white supremacist politics behind Donald Trump's rise to power is dangerous, I do believe that, like Ben Carson, at least I believe that Ben Carson is saying, that the rise of political correctness can lead to a totalitarianism, a social democratic central planning communism and socialism, which is really the ultimate goal there. And if you understand what Donald Trump wants, pushing for national health care, and his plans for central planning for the United States, it all leads to the same totalitarian pot. And unfortunately, libertarians are standing behind the scenes here saying, well, we don't want central planning. We don't want a national plan. We don't want to be on the road to serfdom. We want freedom. And I think our voice right now is sort of being lost in the miasma of differing opinions and the central planners who think, I mean, Americans love a strong man. That's why Trump is popular. And to me, you know, Benjamin Carson shows actually that some conservatives, some good conservatives, do want an intellectual man. And I think that Ben Carson is certainly miles of head and shoulders above Donald Trump. If the Republicans were to nominate Ben Carson, I would think that these people, the grassroots and the Tea Partiers and conservatives, have actually given themselves an intellectual candidate to go up against whoever the Democrats will have. I think in some ways I would applaud the Republicans for that. And simply because I think, you know, I want what's good for America. You know, a lot of people, some of you might know, that I am seeking the nomination for the Libertarian Party. And in truth, if the Republicans were to nominate Donald Trump, that would probably be good for the Libertarians. But that doesn't mean that just because something is in my own good doesn't mean it's good for America. Meaning that if I were to win the Libertarian Party nomination for president and I were to go up against Donald Trump, it would be good for libertarians, for the Libertarian Party, and for our message. But it would be bad for America, because if he won, he would be the strong man that we've read here from The Road to Serfdom. And I certainly do not want that. I want America to be better off. That's why I'm running. But I want to be objective and say that there is a conflict of interest here, because... And I want you to be aware of that, and I always want to be honest with you listeners to the show, because again, I'm not saying I'm totally selfless here, but I mean, I you know, libertarians, they say, oh, we're selfish and stuff, but I do want America to be better off, and I do want a good person to win the presidency of the United States, and I don't want us to have another 8 years of growth in government and central planning over our lives. Unfortunately, that's what it appears to be headed towards. But I don't know that Ben Carson is leading us to the road to serfdom. As a matter of fact, I think he's probably he's one of the well-meaning people that might actually be able to bring some change, some positive, hopeful change to the United States. Because, again, you've got, if you look at it between Ben Carson and Donald Trump, I mean, it's really, there's just no comparison of the two men. You know, Benjamin Carson is a brain surgeon. He is a genius. He's a pediatric neurosurgeon. So he was dealing with children. I mean, how can you not love a man and respect a man who his entire life was taking care of the most vital organ of children? And I won't say, you know, that I hate Ben Carson, because I don't. I actually like Ben Carson. I think he's a good man. I think he's got some good ideas, but he's also got some bad ideas, and I disagree with him on his position on the war on drugs. I understand why he takes it, being a physician. But I think that we need to have a more humane approach to those issues. And I also disagree with him about, you know, gay marriage, and he's a social conservative, for example, and I'm not. I personally am fine with people being social conservative, but I don't know that that needs to be legislated. Actually, I don't believe it has to be. It should be legislated at all. You shouldn't be legislating social liberalism either. You know, one of the reasons that I want to run for president is because I want to show a good example of what it means to have your own personal beliefs and not force them on anyone else. So for example, my lack of faith, my lack of belief in a higher power, you know, that doesn't mean that I don't defend religious freedom. It means that I defend religious freedom even more. And that applies to everyone. And I also disagreed with Ben Carson about not having a Muslim be president. You know, if a Muslim can be president of the United States, he didn't say he can't be. He said he doesn't think he should be. But the anyone can be in the United States who is constitutionally eligible. There's no religious test for office. And so anyone can be president of the United States as long as they are constitutionally eligible. And of course, that is controversial because some people, they think, oh, if a Muslim gets in office, they're going to be Sharia and all of that. And I think Ben Carson is probably right to worry about, you know, the potential for someone to come and rise to power that would enforce their beliefs on everyone. But if we could all get into the agreement, the libertarian agreement, that we can have our beliefs, but we don't use government to force them on anyone else, that would bring us off of the road to serfdom. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Don't forget, very important, go sign up for Jason, go get Jason Stapleton's podcast at jasonstapleton.com. Thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. Of course, if you haven't already subscribed to us, you can find us on iTunes as well. And if you don't have an iPhone or an Apple device, you can also find us on Android. You can find us on Stitcher, the Stitcher app. Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com, download it, and you can find the Freedom Report podcast. Every time that gets uploaded, it gets pushed over to you, so you will be able to hear us. And don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.com.